This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on September 22nd, 2011. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Everyone, the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for September 22nd will come to order. Before we launch into our agenda, I want to welcome Tony Herman, our new general counsel. As the commission announced in June, which seems like such a long time ago, we're so happy to have you here. Tony comes to us from Covington and Burlington, where he was a senior litigation partner. Where your wide-ranging commercial litigation practice, including litigation with several federal agencies, so the world of the FEC shouldn't be entirely new to him, although the subject matter may be, but we know he's a quick learner. Tony also served as chair of the firm's Public Service Committee and has been widely recognized for his commitment to pro bono work. My colleagues and I are very happy to have Tony here. We're looking forward to working with you. His deep legal experience as a litigator and an agency advisor and his enthusiasm for public service make him an ideal person to lead our general counsel's office at this time. I also want to take this opportunity to thank again Chris Huey, who has been so ably serving as acting general counsel in this time of transition, and for so ably leading Tony's transition into the agency, literally and figuratively helping him find his way around the building. So we thank you, Chris, and look forward to continuing to work with you in your important role as our deputy general counsel. With that, we will turn to our agenda. The first item is a correction and approval of minutes. Is there a motion, Vice Chair Hunter?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. I move to approve agenda document number 11-56, the minutes for the open session held on September 1st, 2011.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 6-0. The next item on our agenda is the draft interpretive rule on when certain independent expenditures are publicly disseminated for reporting purposes. This matter was held over from our last open meeting. Ms. Helmsley, please proceed when ready.
Thank you, Chair Bowerly. Commissioners, good morning to you. Agenda document 11-52 is a draft interpretive rule initially considered and informally made available for public comment on September 1st. The draft provides guidance on the meaning of publicly disseminated for the purpose of reporting certain independent expenditures under 11 CFR 104.4 and 109.10. Specifically, the draft addresses public dissemination of independent expenditure communications that take the form of items such as yard signs, mini billboards, handbills, T-shirts, hats, and buttons. The draft provides that these items may be reported on any reasonable date, starting with the date the filer receives or exercises control over the items in the usual and normal course of dissemination. We received two comments on the draft interpretive rule. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Is there any discussion on this draft? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of small edits to suggest. One of which was originated in my office. We thought there needed a point of clarification, one in Commissioner McGann's office, who says we never agree on anything. I did want to mention briefly, though, that we did get a couple of good, thoughtful comments, and we're not ignoring them. We just didn't think that we could incorporate those concepts into this document in time to approve it today, and we thought we had the rest of this nailed down, and it would provide some guidance for folks, and we should get out the guidance that we can now, and I think we're going to continue to think about those comments, and there may be more guidance on those topics forthcoming in the future. I think this issue came up in the context of an audit, and the way we resolved it in an audit, we decided that, gee, if we're going to say this is okay for this committee, then we should also make it clear to everybody else so that everybody's on the same playing field and everybody knows how to do this. It's not hard to figure out what the public distribution date is on a newspaper ad because it's there in the paper and there's a date on the top, and it's easy to figure it out. But when people are handing out tangible items like signs and hats and bumper stickers, then it becomes a little bit more complicated because they tend to be handed out in stages and they're received in stages and they're publicly available in stages. So we're giving people a bunch of options that we think are reasonable, and I'm glad that the Commission was able to come to agreement on this. So All that is a long introduction to my very small edits, which are both on page 3 of the draft, I think, one of which would add a sentence to footnote, to the end of footnote 1. And it would say, this particular rule interprets, quote, publicly disseminated, end quote, for those items that do not have an inherent date certain for public dissemination, such as yard signs, mini billboards, handbills, T-shirts, hats, and buttons, period. And that just goes to the point that I was just making, that these things that get handed out are harder to figure out sometimes than things that get published in a newspaper. The second suggestion would be to add a new footnote 2 at the end of the seventh line on page 3, the sentence that ends, communications are actually disseminated up to and including the date that the communications are actually disseminated to the public, period, and then we would hang a new footnote. And again, I want to credit Commissioner McGann for this thought, but I'm just going to do it all in one time. And the footnote would read, once the public dissemination date is established, comma, independent expenditure communications must be reported pursuant to 11 CFR 104.4B2, C and F, and 109.10 C and D, period. So I don't want to foreclose any discussion, but at the appropriate time, I would be happy to move that we approve this document with those amendments that I just described.
Any further discussion? Commissioner McGann.
Appreciate the amendments. I can support them and appreciate you making mine for me. Saves time. I do want to echo Commissioner Weintraub's thoughts, though, on the comments filed primarily, I think it was at SEIU. That's the one I have in front of me. What we're doing here today is we're putting out guidance that resulted from a real situation and a real audit, particularly with respect to one union's distribution of yard signs. And it became difficult to know when to file the independent expenditure report because of the way the materials roll out from the national to the locals and out to people. I think I understand what the comment's saying. I'm not entirely sure. I would be willing to put it in this document, but for the fact that this was not the issue that was in the audit, that this guidance is designed to help clarify. But I guess what I'm saying is if SEIU wants to come in with an advisory opinion, I'd certainly be all ears. I don't see what they're suggesting. And to put a fine point on oral communications that take place as part of a canvas operation as being all that different from what we're doing here today, not entirely clear to me how you would report an oral communication. I guess maybe it's the cost of the person who's going door to door. I guess that's what we mean. But I think it'd be part of the yard sign dissemination. I would assume it would be the same rule unless factually I'm just all wet. But I wanted to put that on the record in case they're listening, that let them know the water's warm on this. No one's saying no. It just isn't really something that needs to go into this document today because I think on balance it's important to get the guidance out sooner rather than later that we can. And if we have to do a round two on more nuanced issues of what goes on with a canvas operation, I'm certainly happy to do that at a later time. But I just want to make that clear. We're not saying no. We're just not there. But if it's still not clear, please let us know.
Is there anything further on this matter? Are we ready for a motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of agenda document 11-52 with the amendments that I previously read.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Thank you, Council. The next matter on our agenda is draft advisory opinion 2011-14, Utah Bankers Association and Utah Bankers Association Action Pack by Kirk Jowers and Matthew Sanderson. If Before we ask Council to present, we have a late submitted document.
I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider the late submission of agenda document numbers 11-57 and 11-58, which is for a matter coming up on the agenda.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries 6-0. Mr. Stefano, please proceed when ready.
Thank you, Chair Bowerly. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 11-57 responds to a request for advisory opinion filed on behalf of the Utah Bankers Association and its separate segregated fund, the UBA Action PAC. The Commission considered this matter at the August 4th open meeting and held it over to today's open meeting. Since the August 4th meeting, the Commission has released another draft designated as Draft C and presented before you as Agenda Document 11-57. Draft C is intended to be a compromise draft. The Commission received one comment on this draft. I will be happy to address any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. Is there any discussion on this draft? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will, at the appropriate time, plan to support this compromise draft. I think that there's been an effort to try to find as much common ground as we can on this, but there were disagreements that we had over over a couple of different issues, and I just wanted to just explain a little bit about where Since we don't have as many, we didn't put out competing drafts about what our perfect position would have been. I just wanted to briefly explain how I approached this. Kind of the two main issues that couldn't get resolved. One was dealt with whether the Utah Bankers Association could accept payments from affiliated state bankers associations without those associations being considered connected organizations. That was one of the issues. And somewhat related to that is the extent to which the employees of affiliated state bankers associations could serve on the councils that are part of the special project, what's called Friends of Traditional Banking that Utah Bankers Association proposed. Could they serve as part of their regular employment responsibilities and without that service being considered a contribution to the PAC? And the other thing that we couldn't reach agreement was with regard to the project's communications and whether or not they could include for identification purposes the job titles of those individuals who were serving on the councils. My position is that I believe that that the Utah Bankers Association could accept such payments and accept the services of employees of affiliated state bankers associations without those being considered contributions or without those resulting in those affiliated entities being considered connected organizations of the Utah Bankers Association PAC. We have prior advisory opinions where the Commission has concluded that members of a trade association could make donations above and beyond what their required annual dues were in order to help defray the administrative and solicitation costs of the trade association's PACs. For the trade association PAC separate segregated fund. And there was nothing in those AOs that indicated that that money can only travel vertically from a member to the trade association PAC and that it couldn't travel horizontally from one member's SSF to another. In fact, there's another advisory opinion, 1995-12, where the Commission specifically permitted affiliated state trade association members of a national trade association to raise funds for the SSF of another state trade association member or for the National Trade Association's SSF. And in addition to not mandating that such assistance can only travel vertically and not horizontally. Nothing also is in these prior advisory opinions that says that providing such a support would result in the organization that is providing the support becoming a connected organization of the recipient SSF. It's important to point out that the SSFs here share a contribution limit, so there's really no concern about circumvention. And so for these reasons, I really didn't think that I thought that clearly under this precedent that this assistance could be provided both in terms of employee time and in terms of actual financial donations from these affiliated state bankers associations to the Utah Bankers Association for assistance on the project's costs without triggering that these organizations would become connected organizations. Therefore, I didn't think that they would need to amend their statement of organization to indicate that they have new connected organizations or that it would require them to change their name. So that was one area where we had disagreement. The other was, again, the communications that are put out by the project. I think that the facts that are presented in this request are materially distinguishable from a different advisory opinion known as the Reyes advisory opinion, which was advisory opinion 2007-10, which concluded that, at least with respect to a fundraising event that was conducted on behalf of a federal candidate, that the contributors' job titles and corporate employers couldn't be used for purposes of sponsoring the event. I think this is a very different situation. The activities that would be conducted by the councils would be independent of any federal candidate's campaign. The use of the title wouldn't be used to indicate that this person has given a contribution to a candidate. Therefore, it's not that that isn't being used to induce a contribution, which I think was the concern in the Reyes advisory opinion. So, as I mentioned, we have been able to find common ground on a lot of issues. We weren't on those two issues, but I just wanted to briefly explain where my position stood. Thank you.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't really planning on going back through it all again since we had this discussion last time. I appreciate my colleague's explanation, and I guess the short answer would be that the AOs that you find pertinent, we find distinguishable, and the AOs that you find distinguishable, we find pertinent. But I also did want to just point out, so that there's not any confusion, the requester submitted a last-minute comment basically saying, don't you really agree on more than what is laid out in Draft C? And the answer to that is no, we don't actually agree on more than what's laid out in Draft C. Because for some of us, whether the affiliated associations is eligible to pay administrative costs or allow its employees to serve on these councils is at issue and would only be permissible if they were deemed connected organizations and if the statement of organization were amended and if the name were changed. So there really isn't any more agreement than is set forth in the draft. We tried to get closer, but it just didn't work. So sorry about that, but this is probably the best we can do, and I also will support what is now called Draft C.
But we appreciate the optimism of the requester's counsel to suggest that there's more we agree on. Is there anything further on this? Commissioner McGann.
I just want to thank you, Madam Chair. Associate myself with the comments of Commissioner Peterson on this. I just want to make a broader point. Really, is what was my first reaction to the AO, which is a lot of this is asking, can they actually do things that to me seem wholly independent of actually dealing with candidates? And for me, when it came in, I thought, gee, Post Citizens United, this is a whole different framework. But we still have statute on the books, I suppose, in part, and then we still have regs. So we're trying to shoehorn this question into what I think is a changing world. You know, for example, I can support the consensus draft, but for example, you know, footnote 7 talks about the 4-hour per month safe harbor for use of corporate facilities. Maybe for reporting purposes, that's going to matter. But, you know, in the big picture, it's not like they're prohibited from doing things anymore. So a lot of this seems to me of vestiges of yesteryear. But to try to get a workable AO, we have to still deal with the framework as it exists, at least as it exists in the minutiae of whether something's whether someone's connected or who can pay for what. It's not an easy question. These tend to be very long and drawn out AOs, and there's a number of them going back since the commission opened its doors, and this is the first one I think that's going to going forward raises some questions that I think we're going to have to deal with in a much bigger way. But I want to throw that out there just to give some guidance and let the requester know where I am, I can vote for the consensus draft, but as with most things, I could just answer yes and then go home. So.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree a lot has changed. How much has changed in the area of corporate facilitation is obviously an area on which different commissioners may hold different views and would be a great topic for rulemaking. I think, you know, fundamentally it goes to whether it's coordinated and therefore potentially an in-kind contribution as opposed to completely independent activity, which might lead to a different result.
Vice Chair Hunter.
Move approval of agenda document 11-57.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Thank you, Council. The next agenda item is draft advisory opinion 2011-16, Dimension 4 Inc. PAC. Good morning, Ms. Hayden. Please proceed when ready.
Thank you, Chair Bowerly, and good morning, Commissioners. Before you is agenda document 11-55, which consists of two draft advisory opinions responding to a request from Dimension 4 Inc. PAC. Dimension 4 Inc. is a privately held corporation, and Dimension 4 Inc. PAC is its separate segregated fund. The D4 Senior Management Fund is a non-interest-bearing joint checking account set up and funded exclusively by several officers of the corporation. These officers are named as joint account holders on the fund, and any of the officers listed may withdraw money at any time. The fund is not a separate legal entity. In 2010, Dimension 4 Inc. PAC loaned the corporation $26,000. The PAC now asks how it may obtain the money it loaned to the corporation. Draft A concludes that if the corporation legally transfers the debt to the fund may repay the loan to the PAC and be subsequently reimbursed by the corporation. Draft A further concludes that the corporation also has the option of returning the money to the PAC within 5 days of the receipt of the Commission's advisory opinion. Draft B concludes that the fund may not repay the loan and be subsequently reimbursed by the corporation. However, Draft B concludes that the seven individual account holders on the fund may draw on the fund to make contributions to the PAC, subject to the Act and Commission regulations. We received no comments on the drafts. Thank you. I would be happy to address any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Council. Is there discussion on the drafts? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to support draft A. This Commissioner Weintraub in the last advisory opinion said that advisory opinions that she found pertinent, we found distinguishable, and vice versa. Those that found distinguishable, we found pertinent. I think the same thing is at operation here. I think that that under past advisory opinions by the Commission that we have narrowly construed the prohibition on the use of corporate funds to repay loans made by political committees. I think that permitting the repayment of the money, in this case from the fund that we're calling it, to the PAC under these circumstances presented doesn't do violence to the Act, to our regulations, to our precedents. I also would support the alternative proposal of allowing them to basically refund the money to the PAC within 5 days of the request. I think it's worth noting that the return of the money to the PAC would result in no windfall to the committee. All that they would be doing is being made whole. There's this, as the request is presented, it would only be a repayment of the principal, so it wouldn't be that they would get 200% interest in the process, which could be viewed as a corporate contribution to the committee. But none of that is happening. Again, there is no windfall to anybody in this case. So I think that this is just, again, making the PAC whole. And for that reason, I can support draft A.
Is there further discussion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sad but true, Commissioner Peterson. Once again, we disagree. I think the regs are pretty clear on this, that corporations are not allowed to repay loans that are made to them by the political committees. And, you know, it's this often happens, you know, we get people who come in and they appear to have, you know, sort of sympathetic stories, but the regs say what they say, and I think that we have to stick with them. So I will be supporting draft B.
Anything further? I'll also be supporting draft B, and as Commissioner Peterson said, we have had advisory opinions that have dealt with a situation with a return of a loan that was actually in process, and I think that's maybe where we come down on different readings of that AO. In the Leahy AO from 1992, as I read it, the transaction was very clearly indicated by the requester that it wasn't even finalized until it would receive an opinion from the commission. So they made some very specific, took very specific measures in their whole process to get approval before the loan would be made, and were able to return the funds. I don't know the details of whether they held it in an escrow account or how it actually worked, but the opinion is very clear that this was a return of a loan, and the request itself was noted that in the event the transaction is not permitted by the commission, that it would return the funds to the committee within 5 business days. So to me, that's just a very different case. In that case, the commission actually said, no, you cannot make the loan and repay it from the corporation, but because apparently the transaction hadn't in some way been finally executed, the commission did allow for the return of those funds. That's obviously not the situation that we have here. And as I agree with Commissioner Weintraub, that otherwise the statute and the regs are clear on this, and in the AO that we have had that is similar to this, the commission actually said, no, you can't do this. So apparently we disagree on what amounts to special circumstances, but from my perspective, this does not. So I'll be supporting draft B. Is there any further discussion? Are we ready for motions? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make a motion on draft A. I just want to, just one final comment. It does seem, if it is the case that a committee cannot be repaid by a corporation, then it is kind of an odd result that if a political committee could be induced to make a loan to a corporation, they're basically giving them free money. I mean, if you're a corporation and can get them to do that, they're basically saying, I'd love to pay you back, but, well, I can't, so thanks for the money. And the result seems a little odd to me. And we've talked at times about the in other contexts about kind of protecting the sanctity of the money that's that flows into the coffers of a political committee, and to me it seems odd that they can make the loan, they just can't be repaid on that loan, even if all they're being repaid is the principal and no interest whatsoever. But again, not to belabor the point, obviously we see that one different, but I just wanted to add that final observation. Madam Chair, I would like to move approval of draft advisory opinion 2011-16, draft A, which is set forth in agenda document number 11-55.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
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 Motion fails 3-3. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe we need a new regulation barring the loan in the first place.
I think we do.
It's an odd decision for a PAC to make. That's what they're going to choose to use their funds for, but not illegal, sadly. So at this point, I move approval of draft B.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Thank you. Motion fails 3-3. At this point, we'll ask counsel to provide a letter to requester indicating that the commission was not able to reach an answer on its request. Thank you. The next two matters on our agenda, the agency procedure following the submission of probable cause briefs by the Office of General Counsel and the draft advance notice of proposed rulemaking for internet communication disclaimers, are being held over at the request of commissioners to our next meeting. We will take them up at that meeting for discussion and hopefully a vote. As many of you are aware, the commission has recently settled and the court issued a stipulated judgment in Kerry versus FEC. That case dealt with the National Defense PAC, a non-connected political committee, which sought to establish a separate account free of contribution limits or source prohibitions from which to make independent political expenditures. At this point, the Commission intends to consider the issues raised by that case, along with those arising from SpeechNow and MLS decisions. And there's a lot of activity internally in the building on that front, and we're hopeful that we might be able to move forward with an NPRM sometime this fall on those topics. There are important issues there that we need to address, and I think we're all hoping that that is upon us at some point soon. In the meantime, the Commission is considering how it might provide some guidance for committees who want to follow in NDPAC's footsteps, given the state of current rules and reporting forms, which, of course, cannot be changed until we embark on a rulemaking. We hope to have something available very soon on that front, perhaps as early as next week. So I guess stay tuned. We're working to make sure that all of the details of reporting are worked out so that those who want to follow what NDPAC did and what the Kerry Court said it could do can also do that. That's all that I have. Mr. Palmer, are there any management or administrative matters for the Commission?
Madam Chair, there is no additional business.
Commissioner Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to go back to one of the first things that that you brought up at the beginning of the meeting, and that I also want to recognize Tony Herman, welcome him to the Commission. He brings a wealth of experience and tremendous legal skills to the position of General Counsel, and I think that he's going to do an excellent job, and want to welcome you on board as well. And I also want to take the opportunity to thank Chris Huey for the excellent service that he provided in the acting role of General Counsel for over a year. I was chairman at the time when we received notice from Tommy Duncan, our prior general counsel, that she would be leaving. And Chris, I don't know whether or not what he was thinking when we came to him and asked him to serve in the acting capacity. He probably maybe wished he'd been on vacation that week, but he willingly took on that job, which is not an easy job. There are a lot of different balls that you have to juggle all at once, and that was thrust upon him in rather short order. And I think he did a stellar job in that role. I always appreciated the responsiveness to whatever request we had for information, for the calm demeanor by which he executed his responsibilities. And in an agency where things can sometimes run a little hot, I think a good cool head, someone who can really bring a degree of calmness and serenity to that office was a very valuable skill. And anyway, I just wanted to thank you personally for all the efforts that you've done over the last well over a year, and they were greatly appreciated.
Is there anything further? With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.